Welcome to Fucking Rad Snowboarding Podcast. I'm Shred Jesus, and this is episode 2. This is a soundtrack from the claymation In Totally Bored, the first of the TV series snowboard movies by the Hatchet Brothers under the Standard Films label. Sean Farmer closes out the film by doing the Mount Baker road gap with his shirt off. It's like the most manly thing that had happened in snowboarding up to that point. And Farmer had lots more where that came from.
This is as far as I go. Here, take this dynamite. Strange things happen in these mountains.
Yeah, you don't put that in the interview.
Okay, I won't.
But when you're dealing with business, you're dealing with a lot of horseshit.
And they're kind of like almost trying too hard to be wild and crazy.
I remember standing at the top of the pipe with Burt Lamar in 86.
In the early 90s, groups of snowboarders were gathering in major ski resort towns all over the world. And every fall, a new batch of snowboard movies would hit the shops and stoke out the riders who'd been hibernating since spring, waiting for the snow to fall. Standard Films' TV series were always at the top of my list of must-see snowboard movies every year. Combining freestyle and freeriding with a heavy metal soundtrack, some of the most iconic tricks in history were documented in those early films. Over 20 years later, you can still ask pretty much any pro snowboarder from the 90s if they remember Noah's Backside 7 from TB4. And believe me, they still remember. But I can honestly say I don't think anything in those movies stood out more than Farmer's rap. It was one of snowboarding's first fuck yeah moments, and it burned the words of Farmer's egocentric personality into the young brains of snowboarding's growing masses.
This is the greatest fucking rhyme of all time. Drill a hole in your head and pour it into your mind. Inject it into your brain. I'm talking mainline. Cause I can lock in on a topic. Just like a Smith grind.
For this episode, we're bringing you a conversation with Sean Farmer, who's still rapping and still shredding today, same as ever. This was recorded on the chairlift and in the lodge. So turn it up and pretend you're riding chair 5 at Mount Baker with one of snowboarding's gnarliest legends.
You get $400, you get Breckenridge, Copper Mountain, Arapahoe Basin, and Keystone. But they didn't allow, none of those places allowed snowboarding. Even Breckenridge, they allowed it for a minute, and then they banned it. Skiers were hating on snowboarding. And then, so, like, they're like, yeah, they're out of control, and they can't stop and all this stuff. So it was legal at Breckenridge, and then all of a sudden, they said you had to have alpine boots, ski boots, and release bindings. That was the only way you could come on the mountain with a snowboard. So, like, I went and got, like, made these release bindings, you know? I would have to show you. This is the wackiest contraption ever, and it was more dangerous because it didn't. They wouldn't stay on. There was a couple companies. There was like actually Flight snowboards. Avalanche might have been around. The first one was the former Elite with no high backs. They were horrible bindings. It didn't work. And they just ripped out. The inserts just ripped out. There was like so much junk. There wasn't even shops when I first started building. But like you couldn't get a snowboard in Breckenridge, Colorado if you wanted to get one. My buddy Steve Link, he started Summit Snowboards. He used to live next door to Tom Sims. Tom Sims used to babysit my friend. And he was pressing boards, too. And then Link learned how to do that. What's that?
Yeah, you passed.
Yeah, somewhere.
Thank you.
But anyway, Steve Link was a big part of the influence for me. And then we go to his shop and build boards and stuff and, like, try them out. And we were always trying to build longboards. Yeah, I don't know why. You know, everyone liked long skis, so we started, long snowboards would be good. And they did kind of work better because, I don't know, just the shapes didn't work very well back then. And under those longboards would always float really nice. Your feet hurt so bad. You couldn't even get a pair of decent boots. Like, you know, you wear Sorels or felt liners. And then we started putting ski boot liners in them. But even that, like, what was kind of lame because, like, ski boot liners are really thin down by your arch and everything. They don't have that much support because it's a different design, you know? I always cut them down because I never, like, rode, like, a total hard shell boot. I couldn't do it. I would try and I would go do it, and I just start carving them down. Pretty soon they weren't, like, a hard shell anymore. It was just, like, gone, you know? And then when they finally, like, I just went back to soft bindings. But I did ride the hard boots for a while. I had, like, the Coflax. I think that was the main one. Whatever Damien and those guys wore, I had a pair of those one time. Still just kind of a pain. It used to just be pain, you know. And then you were just trying to figure out how that would work, you know, because you're always trying to carve gear and everything. since then I've realized, like, if the harder the snow is, the softer I ride. That's kind of how I feel. Like, if it's super icy or whatever, I'll just let it slide. I don't care. I'm not trying to, like, always be carving. We were obsessed with carving then, but then you realize you don't really have to do that all the time. There's a time to just let it go sideways, you know? Well, yeah, there weren't any rules because no one even had a book on how to do it, you know? But yeah, there was actually quite a few boards floating around, even in the 80s, you know, in the late 80s. There's like, I remember the dude's prop snowboards, and they're all there's literally a piece of plastic. And like just cut out and like kind of bent on the ends, you know. Here's what happened. Somehow Burton like saw, or I mean, yeah, Burton too, but Breckenridge saw the potential that same year when they wouldn't let me on the mountain in 85, 86, and then they turned and opened up to snowboarders. Then everyone moved to Colorado the next year. All the pro guys, everyone did. But like that year that they opened up, they had the world championships in Breckenridge, and then I just went in the amateur division and won like the GS and the slalom and the half pipe. And then yes, Dave Weaver from Sims was all, dude, we want you on the team, yeah, man. And I was like, all right. Yeah, but and I still didn't really take it serious, but I was like, okay, you know what, pro snowboarding, right, whatever. And then like, but I'll take a board, you know what I mean? So like I got some boards out of him, and I don't think I even had a contract. It's just kind of a deal. And then I don't know what happened for a few years. I rode like whatever. I've always kind of rode almost whatever I want. Summit. Now that's Steve Link, you know? And he just had a garage. He never really had like a full factory setup. It was just like two or three guys, one or two dudes at a time, like making those things, you know.
And then
we used to make them and pull them out of the press and then ride them that same night. Because there's this place called Mesa Cortina, and then we'd do like runs. Road shots in the middle of the night, all like high and stuff, because we stayed up all night, partied all night at his shop, and like pretty much took everything we could find to party with. Yeah, I don't know. California's all right, but lame. Everything's super expensive, kind of. I'm sure stuff's pricey in Canada too, but it's just like, I don't know, I don't understand California, the way they run it. But the geographically, it's pretty awesome. I'm kind of tired of Cali. I don't know if I can endure any more shitty winters. The scene's so blown out there, you know, when it does happen. I mean, not totally. I know how to work it, you know, and get it done pretty good. But some days, there's no way around it. It's just blown out, you know what I mean? But I will go to North Star. A lot of times, like, it'll snow 3 feet at Squaw, right? And then they have to bomb. They never open on time. It's not like these guys are open. Like, they'd be like bombing for, dude, probably wouldn't open till 10, you know what I mean? But meanwhile, everyone's stacking up like deeper and deeper, and everyone's all twisted to get on the hill. But you can go to North Star and like, you can be taking runs and listen to them bomb at Squaw and laugh. Like 9:30, you've already got like five or six runs in, and you know that everyone's just standing in line over at the other place, and people just insist on it, you know? He's a pretty good guy, man, I guess, overall, you know? We always kind of made fun of him back in the day. Mm-hmm. Really, I really liked watching him ride, you know? I mean, how could you not? He was rad. He was, like, bigger than life. And his rocket airs and everything were so sick. He was building kickers before anyone. We used to, like, laugh at that, too. We hated building kickers. I probably count on one hand how many times I built a kicker. I don't know, like, well, I used to just be able to go to Alaska and just walk in there. I'd just go in there and just get in the heli, you know? And then just tell them, like, yeah, just build K2. And I would fly. I could fly anywhere I wanted, you know? Like, I would just call them, like, yeah, I'm going to France next week. I need a ticket. And they would just do it, you know? They would just send me wherever I wanted all the time. That's awesome to be able to do that, like, as a snowboarder. Like, oh, yeah, I heard this cool over here. And then you just, like, make one phone call, and like you're off on a trip, you know. That was pretty rad. So, and being able to heli, and then like I could have done a lot better, you know, I think when I look back, but it was awesome. We just partied a lot. I kind of sometimes I think I would have been better if I took it seriously and didn't party, but that's the way we did it, you know. It was just so fun. I mean, partying and all that is just a blast, and back then I just thought that was the best thing in the whole world. It was like almost more important to me than snowboarding, but it was right up there. It was snowboarding and partying was like pretty much on par, you know? I don't know why that is. Yeah, the first time I ever came here, I rode with them because I came to the Bank Slalom in the 80s, and then he took me around, snowed and stuff. But I just always remember, I go, after I've been riding for 10 years, man, I'll really be good. We filmed in bounds at Squaw. It's like impossible now. Because like,
by the time you get the camera out, there'll be like five dudes will be in line, you know? No, it's great in there. Like to write all the way to about right here
and then just take the track out.
But that little cat road out, it's kind of brutal. You go jumping off shit right now, you're gonna get hurt, man, I'm telling you. He was at K2 as well. He didn't. He was pissed because I got a model and he didn't. That's from yesterday or something, it almost looks like.
Should we go do that? I'll do that.
I think it's better than going under the chair. I'd love to go under the chair, but I think the seat still might get kicked out. Should I turn my beacon on?
No, I'm not doing that anymore. I work or whatever I can, just so I can go snowboarding, you know, and kite surf and stuff, whatever. I worked in the oil field over the summer and saved some money. She was a snowboard instructor at Breckenridge, and she was on a... We gave her a 185 fucking summit board, and she taught on it all season.
Yeah, I got a couple indies the other day. I had an indie and a method, but not today. I just like exotic snowboards. You know, I did the longboard thing, and it's like I said, if I was in Europe or something, you know, on a 3-foot day, I'll ride a longboard, but as soon as it gets beat up, I'll just go right back to my snowboard. And I have like a 63 that I like to ride, and I went over there with Harry Guns and stuff. And he had given me those longboards, and I came over there with this Nidecker thing, this 163 that I ride a lot. And I'm sure he was bummed, but I rode that thing at that resort. It was the perfect tool. It worked really well. It would be really good here too. But yeah, it's a 63, but it's like narrow in the tail. It's kind of that same idea. That board you can get air on and stuff. I don't mean like a totally fish shaped with a teeny tiny tail. It just has to be narrower. It's better for every condition except total ice, but even like slush, they work better in slush. They work better in like, it makes breakable crust feel just like a powder day almost. 2 inches to 2 feet to even tracked out, but like just like if it's total ice and you want to be 20 and like have like a good edge bite, then maybe it's not the best thing. But other than that, it just rides so good. The only reason I'm not on it is I don't want to hit any rocks with it. Because every year I get one and it doesn't snow, we have a horrible season. Last year I took one mine out and I was like, hit a rock. It was a killer epic day, and I was riding with Chris Roach. But I just hit these rocks and ragged all and like blew the edge out. It didn't even blow the edge out, but damaged it pretty good. Enough to piss me off really bad. And it was like perfect. The thing was so perfect. You have this like extra control that's really, really rad. Okay, that 420 thing, it's rad in the PAL. But that board goes killer in the PAL, and it's killer on the hard pack. It was narrow, quick edge to edge. It's like ding, 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 you know. Here's what happens. Everyone wants to be able to throw their board around and swivel it a whole lot. You can do that on the shorter boards, but when you start getting the 170s and 180s, there's no more swiveling around. You have to like let the thing arc all the way out. Basically, like when you look downhill, you're gonna be like, I'm gonna go all the way down there, I'm gonna be going like 60 miles an hour, and then I'm gonna like turn there and go around that tree, but I'm not even gonna slow down. It's just gonna be carrying all the speed. Or you can like arc all the way back up the hill, but if you try to slide those things around, you'll just beat yourself up. It's actually like doesn't require a whole lot of effort. I don't know if you ever saw Totally Board One. You know the claymation? Well, that dude's name is Fred Sturr, and he was an artist. And he made all that clay, dudes. That guy, I was like, dude, I want to board my own. He's like, I'll make you a silkscreen. I was like, all right, make me a silkscreen. So he just like made me a silkscreen, rolled it up, and mailed it to Steve Link. And then we just unrolled it and stapled it. All you got to do is staple it to a frame and like squeeze some ink through it. That was sort of kind of during the same time as K2, because I was with K2, but I'd ride those things anyway just because no one had them. I knew, and they knew too, that it's not like I was riding Burton. It's not in conflict with them. It's just like a small-time dude making something custom, one-of-a-kind thing. And plus, nobody had it. It just set you apart, you know? Yeah, that was really good. You were popping some airs, dude.
Here's the fucking shredding.
That's good.
Could you guess all the people Sean talked about in the interview? He mentioned making fun of Damian Sanders, whose interview we will hear later this season. He rode with Craig Kelly when he first went to Baker. Farmer's best friend Nick Parada was pissed that Farmer got a pro model on K2. But they're still great friends to this day. Farmer's ex-girlfriend, Transworld cover girl Morgan LaFont, taught snowboarding at Breckenridge on a 185 summit board. And Harry Guns was the Euro legend responsible for Crazy Banana. He now runs Rad Air snowboards and sends Rad Air tanker longboards to Farmer for those deep days. Fucking rad shoutouts to Mark at WinterStick.net, a fan page with amazing footage of early shredding and pics of Mark's amazing collection of original winter sticks. Derek Cormendi of Divide Rides, thanks for your messages of encouragement. James Streeter, thanks for keeping us on getting the podcast up on iTunes. And extra special thanks to Jeremy Jensen from Grassroots Pow Surfing in Utah. Go check out his Facebook page and check out powsurf.com and scope out the amazing boards he's selling. Some big names in snowboarding are ordering his boards and taking it back to the roots of powder riding on his product. Fucking Rad Snowboarding Podcast is brought to you by BR Productions. If you want to contact us, send a message to the Facebook page. Thanks for listening to the whole episode. Your support is keeping us stoked. We'll have another episode next Wednesday.